This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At T-Mobile, we'll give you four free 5G phones and four lines for only $25 per line per month with eligible trade-ins. And no, it's not a contest. It's every day for a limited time. Everyone's a winner on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay. Up to $830 off each phone via 24 monthly bill credits plus taxes, fees, and $10 device connection charge. For well qualified customers, contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. If you had Clemson right now in your bracket, I would start to get worried. They're down 21-8. They have not scored in 6 minutes. The ACC is off to a terrible start in this NCAA tournament. Louisville got the brakes beat off them earlier today. Clemson is en route of getting the brakes beat off them by McNeese State. It's not even that McNeese State is playing so well. It is that Clemson is playing so poorly right now. We will get back to that coming up in a bit, but let's continue to get you ready for the 7-10 matchup coming up later today in Providence, Rhode Island. Jackson Collier of Arkansas Rivals joins us on the show to get you ready for Jayhawks and Razors back. Jackson, how you doing today, my man?
I am doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How is Providence, Rhode Island? I've never been there before. Have you got a chance to like walk around? Have you got a chance to like see all the sights?
I'm actually not up there. I wasn't able to get off work to get out there. So unfortunately, not sightseeing, not being boots on the ground and all that sort of stuff. But seeing some good sights and sounds from some Razorback fans up there.
So let's start with this. Arkansas was a team that was ranked preseason top 10, top 15. People had high expectations coming into this season. They are a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament. What went wrong for the Razorbacks this year?
Oh, goodness. Started out kind of in the wrong spot. Calipari limited himself to a rotation of 9 players. And that sort of hampered him. And you look at that and you say, well, theoretically, if there are no injuries, most teams only play 8-9 deep anyway, so you should be fine. Well, then the injuries happen, especially in the offseason. Jonas Adu had foot surgery. Jonell Davis had a wrist injury. He missed like 4 months of practice. You had other guys with concussions, with other injuries. So it really was just from the onset of not having enough depth, not having enough players, and then injuries compounding that. Adding to that, I think, was the added difficulty of getting all these players to mesh while they were missing practice time. But in general, just in the portal era, it's hard to know how players will mesh and get along with each other, how their playing styles, how their different roles will – how they're acclimate to their different roles and all those sorts of things. And all that kind of combined into this perfect storm where even though they were 11-2 in the non-conference, they weren't overly impressive, barely beat Michigan. They lost their other major non-conference matchups against Illinois and Baylor. Didn't really win by a lot or impressively against anybody in the non-conference other than, I think, North Carolina A&T. And then, you get to conference play, and the SEC was a gauntlet. They started 0-5 and then got to 1-6. So it really was just a weird beginning to the season, I would say, with all those things I mentioned.
So you mentioned the injuries. You guys are losing one of your top players. He's not going to be playing in this game, but you're also getting another one back. What does getting Boogie Flan mean for the matchup today? A guy that hasn't played in quite some time and now dropping him in the middle of an NCAA tournament run.
So I think at the very least it's an extra body because they've been playing with seven players for 3-4 weeks now with the loss of Adu Thiro. So they get an extra body, which means, you know, hopefully foul trouble won't be as big of an issue. Legs and fatigue hopefully won't be as big of an issue. But also they're getting probably the most talented player on the roster back. He, by all means, was the most talented player on the roster. He's a three-level scorer, a really talented ball handler, can get downhill, can drive, can create driving lanes, can facilitate for other players. Is a pretty, I would say, plus defender as well. So, you know, and he's technically, I mean, Cal has said he's 100%. He hasn't been practicing a ton, so I don't know how much rust there will be. They've already said that he'll be in a reduced role, probably 10 to 15 minutes off the bench, more likely than not. But I think at the very least it can't hurt. And even if he's like a spot-up shooter and an extra body, he's a 37% three-point shooter. At least before his injury. So I think it helps. You also got to worry about, you know, like you said, just dropping him into the situation, dropping him into an NCAA tournament after being off for so long. How will he adjust? How will he feel? How much rust will there be? Will that throw other guys off? Since, you know, we talked about how all these players really didn't know their roles early on, and that contributed to the lack of success early in the season. Boogie Flan was present for that. So will inserting him back revert the team back to that, or have they kind of fixed all that? A lot of questions.
Right now we're talking to Jackson Collier. He covers Arkansas for their Rivals page, taking a closer look at the Razorbacks as they get ready for the 7-10 matchup coming up later today against the Kansas Jayhawks. How are fans taking to John Calipari in year one? There was certainly a lot of hype and buzz. I saw that Tyson Chicken helped put up a lot of money to bring him there. NIL, they certainly brought in a lot of exciting players. Year one cannot be going how fans expected it to go for the Razorbacks.
No, you know, I think fans, for the most part, were somewhat realistic with their expectations. I don't think any fan was expecting John Calipari to walk in the door year one and go compete for a national championship. I do think they expected better to start SEC play than 0-5 for sure. But I think the way that they ended the conference season, they went 8-5 down the stretch and were playing really, really strong basketball and really good basketball. I think that, you know, gained a lot of faith back in fans. Some fans had written the team off as early as mid-January. A lot of fans were growing hostile, not necessarily at Cal, but just at the program in general and just, you know, how fans can be. They're like, I'm not going to show up to the games because they're not playing very well. And then now I'm going to complain about everything on social media because they're losing. And, you know, one win can change that tune and then a second win and then a third win. And so, you know, even though it wasn't quite to the level of the expectations that fans might have had, I still think fans are somewhat realistic with, okay, we dealt with injuries. Even though Cal kind of self-imposed a shorter roster and that hurt him, you know, the turnaround was still sufficient, and we're going to take this first season as a win, considering, you know, Arkansas didn't make the NCAA tournament last year. And Cal is now just the second coach in program history to take the team to an NCAA tournament in his first season as head coach. So I think all in all, it comes away with a net positive, even though it's a smaller margin than most expected.
So, Jackson, you got a chance to see this KU team earlier in the season, albeit a different team in an exhibition game. What's something that KU does that worries you heading into this matchup? What's something that you feel confident that Arkansas is going to be able to do that could help them pull off the slight upset?
So I think one thing that Kansas does really well is play through Hunter Dickinson. And in addition to that, they rebound really well. Hunter Dickinson's one of the best big men in college basketball, and he has been for a few years now. There's a reason that he was so sought after when he transferred from Michigan, and he's been the focal point of a lot of social media scrutiny and praise ever since he got to Kansas. it's because he's a very good basketball player, you know, and he's having another great year for Kansas this year. Arkansas has not had a great interior presence all season. I will say Jonas Adu has stepped up of late the past few weeks once he finally got 100% healthy from his foot surgery. But I still think that is a matchup that will give Arkansas some issues. And outside of just Hunter Dickinson, I think the entire front court from Kansas is more talented and has more size and are better rebounders than Arkansas's front court. So I think that's a big, you know, advantage towards Kansas in this game. If Kansas can crash the offensive glass and generate second chance points, I really think Kansas has a really good shot at winning this game. On the flip side of that, though, I think Arkansas has the advantage in the backcourt. And I think what Arkansas is going to try to do is what they do to most teams, is try to get downhill, finish at the rim with their just their gauntlet of guards. I mean, Jonell Davis is finally playing like the transfer that everybody expected him to be. DJ Wagner's really stepped up and has added a threat from the perimeter. Carter Knox has even come on and become a true three-level scorer as well. Billy Richmond is electric, and then you add Boogie Flan back to that. So you have this whole staple of guards that can get downhill and can finish at the rim, and I think that's an advantage for Arkansas, especially if they get fouled and they get to the free throw line and make their free throws.
Right now we're talking to Jackson Collier for a couple more minutes here. He covers the Razorbacks. Taking a closer look at their matchup coming up later today against the Kansas Jayhawks, who is a potential X factor on Arkansas? You mentioned a bunch of guards that college basketball fans know. Is there a guy that you think could quietly go for 20 and tip things in Arkansas's favor if they get hot tonight?
I think Trevin Brazil. He's a stretch four for the Razorbacks. This will be his first NCAA tournament. He's been on some Arkansas teams that have made the NCAA tournament, but he's been injured in those appearances. So this will be his first tournament appearance as an actual healthy player. You know, he's stepped up in a much bigger role ever since the Adethiro went down, mainly out of necessity. He had not been playing well this season, even though he was given minutes. He was given a pretty decent-sized role and just had not been playing to the level that most people expected that he would. And now he has been. He started making a lot of shots. He's playing much more aggressive than he was in the past. He's been rebounding and attacking the glass much better. There's been a few games where he's gotten double-doubles recently. He'll be knocking down some perimeter jump shots. He'll be scoring 15-plus points. His season averages are pretty low, but I think if Arkansas wins this game, there could be a good chance that it's because Trevin Brazil is hitting some shots and scoring as well.
I want to get you out of here with this. I cheer for Missouri. You cover Arkansas. So we both have watched a lot of SEC basketball this year. Do you believe all the hype? Do you think this conference was maybe as good as people think? I certainly believe it was at the top. I think that Florida is playing better than anybody. Auburn struggled a little bit the second half of the season, I guess the last month or so of the season, but they were very good this year. Tennessee's very good this year. I'm maybe more concerned a little bit with the middle of it. Is there a team you think in that Arkansas, Missouri, Ole Miss range that you think could go on a little bit of a run here in the tournament?
Oh, goodness. I will say I do believe the hype. I think the SEC is as good as advertised. Whether that translates to the NCAA tournament is to be determined. Kind of skeptical of it translating to the NCAA tournament just because the tournament is such a crapshoot. You know, it's all matchup dependent, and it's the greatest event in all of sports. So it might not – the SEC might not win a ton of games or whatever in the NCAA tournament, but I still will hold firm that I think it's the best basketball conference in the country by a wide margin. As far as a team to make a run in that mid-tier, that's tough, honestly, because I had a lot of the mid-tier teams losing. I think I had Missouri winning its first round and then dropping to, I think, Texas Tech. I have Georgia losing first round. I have Texas A&M losing first round. I have Ole Miss losing first round. I have Vanderbilt losing first round in my brackets. So it gets hard to then look and think, like, who else could make a run? Theoretically, Arkansas could be that team too, but, you know, they got to get past Kansas tonight. If I had to pick one, I guess I would pick Arkansas. And I try to say that as completely unbiased as possible because I think that is completely matchup dependent. I think Arkansas, having the guards that they do in Kansas, kind of allowing guards to get downhill, that bodes well for Arkansas. Again, I say that saying all what I've said prior, if Kansas wins on the glass and Kansas wins the game tonight. But if Arkansas so happens to get past Kansas tonight, I really like the second round matchup against St. John's for Arkansas, because both teams are really good defensively. St. John's cannot shoot worth anything, and Arkansas has prevented teams from shooting at all. So I think that matchup might bode well for Arkansas too. So I really don't think any middle-tier SEC team makes a run, to be completely transparent. I don't think any team will. But as unbiased as possible, I think Arkansas would have the best chance. If I had to choose a non-Arkansas team, I think it would probably be Missouri.
That is Jackson Collier joining us on the show today. He covers the Razorbacks for Rivals. Jackson, man, I'm hoping for a great game tonight between two-story programs. Thanks a lot for popping on today.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.